Today on Off Mic, the primary is finally here. The most anticipated race is that for U.S. Congress for Indiana's 1st Congressional District. We hear from five candidates running for the Democratic nomination: Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr., Attorney Sabrina Hake, Jim Harper, Indiana State Representative Mata Candelaria Reardon, and North Township Trustee Frank Mervan Jr. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Early voting has started in Indiana, and right here in Northwest Indiana, there are 14 candidates running in the 1st Congressional District Democratic primary. That's the seat now held by the retiring Peter J. Visklosky. Today, we hear from five of the candidates. We start off with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. Mayor, welcome to Off Mic.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Well, let me ask you this, starting off. You started off your campaign near the beginning of the year, then the pandemic hit. How has it affected your ability to get your message out?
Well, technically, I started my campaign the day Congressman Visklosky announced his retirement, which was early November. So we had November and December of normal campaigning, January, obviously, normal campaigning, and obviously very intense campaigning. And then February, obviously, we're still going normal. And then in March, I had a full calendar of events. I had fundraisers. I had actual huge fundraiser, my St. Patrick's Day fundraiser. And when the lockdown went into place, we lost everything that we had planned to do between then and May 5th, which originally was Election Day. So basically, we had to pivot as a campaign and go from heavy, travel, around Northwest Indiana and shaking hands and seeing people face to face to online, over the radio, a lot of TV online, Facebook Live, that kind of stuff. And quite frankly, as mayor of Hammond, I had to focus on my job instead of political events and politicking like I would normally do running for office. I'm completely focused on being the mayor and trying to get Hammond and our 81,000 residents out of this situation with as low an infection rate as possible and as few fatalities as possible.
Well, that kind of was my next question. As the mayor of Northwest Indiana's largest city by population, you've had to turn away your attention from your campaign to deal with the pandemic in your city. Has that been a positive for you or a negative?
Well, obviously it's a negative because it's a pandemic, and it's a negative because over 500 residents of Hammond have been infected with it, 15 fatalities due to the COVID-19 epidemic in Hammond alone. So it's never a positive. But if you're talking about campaigning, I think the best thing that I could do in the situation that we were dealt with in mid-March, the best thing I could have done was show Northwest Indiana how good of a mayor I am. And that's really what I focused on, instead of being political, instead of putting on PPE and taking pictures with nurses and taking pictures with firemen. Instead, I focused on being a good mayor and running my city well during an unprecedented pandemic. And quite frankly, I think Hammond residents really appreciated what we've done. I've had a coronavirus task force meeting aired weekly since the outbreak happened, and we're keeping our residents informed, and I'm in regular communication with public safety and with the hospitals and with medical professionals. And I think given the situation, we've done well so far, and we're not done yet, by the way. I still am the mayor, regardless of how June 2nd turns out, and I still have a lot of work to do to get it through this situation safely.
Well, what are your top three campaign issues that you're focusing on?
Well, healthcare is obviously, when you think about the 30 million Americans that have lost their jobs recently, and how I bet you two-thirds of the Americans that lost their jobs relied on their employer for their health care benefits. We're in a crisis, a health care crisis in a pandemic, and now a bunch of people have lost their jobs and their health insurance. And I just can't see how we're the best country in the world and people from all over the world want to live here, and then when you get here, it's nearly impossible unless you're wealthy or you've got a good job to get health care. And that's got to be changed, and that's something that I'm going to focus on as Northwest Indiana's next congressman, as a public option. where if you have great health care and you like your health care, you don't have to go to a government plan. But if you don't have health care, let's say you work at a fast food place or you have a part-time job but you still want to get health care, there should be an affordable government health care plan that's offered that gives you reasonable co-pays, reasonable deductibles, and it should be funded through the government, you know, as a safety net. That's what I believe in. Jobs is also something I believe a lot in. $900 million in new economic development into the city of Hammond while I've been mayor. $900 million. Obviously, investing in America. You know, we need to rebuild our cities and our infrastructure across the country. And, you know, look at what's going on with the Lakeshore right now. And no help from the federal government, no help from the state government, you know, and the effects of climate change. And, you know, in Hammond, we've done our part to flatten the curve of our carbon footprint, which is something we need to flatten the curve on also. We've focused on flattening the curve with infection rates. I want to flatten the curve on our carbon footprint. And we've done that in Hammond, and I think I can take the same can-do attitude I've had as mayor, and I think it works well in Washington, D.C.
Mayor, there's been a lot of back and forth with President Donald Trump over whether states are taking too long to reopen. Where do you stand on this issue?
I think there's good arguments to be made on both sides, okay? That we were told initially we need to flatten the curve. We don't want to overload our healthcare system. We don't want to overload the ERs, so they have to make life and death decisions about who gets to use a respirator and who doesn't get to use a respirator. You know, and we did that, by the way. We went in mid-March, all of us locked down across the United States of America. We devastated our economy, but we flattened the curve. And we could have saved, I don't know, tens of thousands of extra lives by doing what we did. However, here we are with a ruined economy, 30 million Americans applying for unemployment, and the answer is not to stay at home and hide in our basement. That's not the American way, Michael. The answer is we need to be smart enough to be able to do both right now. We flatten the curve, so let's get out there and try to help fix our economy. And I'm not saying go back to the old ways and shake hands and hug each other and get in each other's space. We have to still, you know, use what we've learned about social distancing, about wearing masks in public, about avoiding unnecessary touching and not touching our face. We still have to do that stuff, but we also have to go to work, Michael, because there's many Americans right now that don't know how they're going to pay for their next round of groceries. That's unacceptable.
Mayor, we've got to ask you this. Last January, federal investigators subpoenaed records from Hammond City Hall. Is there anything you can say about this issue?
We are a keeper of records at Hammond City Hall. There's thousands of employees, thousands of contractors that go through Hammond City Hall, and they do things like demolitions, and they do other jobs like environmental jobs and things of that nature. And sometimes, 15 times a year, the feds come over to us. We have a great relationship with them. They say, can you give us records on this, this, and this? And we say, sure, here you go. And then it's verified from us. So I can tell you that it's not the first time that the federal government's received records from the city of Hammond or from any other type of government for the record, and it's not the last time. That's how they prove their cases. But I can tell you this, it had absolutely nothing to do with me, had absolutely nothing to do with my administration, had absolutely nothing to do with anybody that works for me. It has to do with one of their investigations, and they want to get records. And I don't know why it was on the front news page, front page of the paper, because it's sort of a routine thing, but had nothing to do with the city of Hammond or the city of Hammond's administration at all. So, by the way, I was asked tons of questions about what they're looking for. That's not my style. I'm not going to ruin the Fed's case and go talking out of school. And I certainly don't want to get crossed with the federal government myself. So I don't want to ruin any type of investigation they have by blabbing publicly about what they're looking for. I know what they're looking for, but it's not my place to say it. It's not my investigation. So ask the Fed, Mike.
Mayor, what separates you from the other candidates who are running for Congress, for First District Congress?
It's experience. I mean, I know you have a state rep coming on to speak shortly, and I know you have a township trustee that's coming on shortly, and the rest of the candidates have never held elected office, but, you know, I hear about supporting the unions. I've done it. I've supported hundreds of union jobs since I've been mayor. I hear about economic development. I've done it. I've raised $900 million in new economic development. City of Hammond said to the mayor, I hear a lot about, I want to help the veterans. I am a veteran. I've spent 6 years in the United States Navy, four years and 3 months underwater on a fast attack nuclear powered submarine. I hear, I want to help flatten, I want to help with the climate change. We've done that in Hammett. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm the only candidate in the race that has the experience and has actually done the things they're talking about. Like one of my campaign commercials says, would you ever get on an airplane with somebody that's never flown before? Like you walk on an airplane and your pilot says, you know, this is my first flight. I've read a lot about it. I've done a lot of simulators, but I've actually never flown before. How comfortable would you feel walking on that airplane, Michael? I wouldn't feel comfortable. I want somebody that's flown hundreds of times and done it, and it's like the back of their hand. And that's what you're getting if you elect Tom McDermott. I've done it. I've proven to you through my actions what I can do, and if I get to Washington, I'll take it to a higher level. Everybody else, we're flying on an airplane with a pilot that's never flown before.
Well, Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. is a Democrat candidate for U.S. Congress. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
My pleasure, Michael. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
A programming note from Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Governor Eric Holcomb will provide updates on COVID-19 and its impact to the Hoosier State every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 1:30 in the afternoon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Tuesdays and Thursdays will be reserved for emergency updates regarding COVID-19 as needed by the governor. You can also watch the press conferences on our sister station, Lakeshore or PBS, or on Facebook. Search for Lakeshore Public Radio.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're speaking to five of the candidates running in the first congressional Democratic primary. Our next guest is Jim Harper. Jim, how is your campaign going?
I'm doing great. Our campaign is doing well. We're doing our best to finish strong as we just have a few days to go heading into the election. Certainly looking forward to June the 2nd, but also really enjoying the conversations that we're having with voters as we get close to the finish line.
All right. Let me ask you this. What are the top three issues that you want to address if you get elected to Congress?
The most important issue that I hear when I talk when I talk with voters in Northwest Indiana is making sure that everybody has quality health care. Certainly that was important before coronavirus, but obviously coronavirus has just really shined a light on some of the inequalities and the gaps in our health care system. I believe we need to get to universal health care. I believe it's a human right, and I would advocate for Medicare for All to try and get there. I also think it's really important that we have bold action on climate change. You know, our climate is in crisis. We are seeing the effects of that already, not only around the world, but right here in Northwest Indiana. And now is the time to act. Frankly, 25 years ago was the time to act. But making sure that we are very aggressively reducing our emissions, getting to carbon neutrality by 2030, which I think is a goal that scientists have set that is very important. And then the last thing is working to restore our democracy, Mike. You know, with after 3 years of the Trump administration absolutely taking a wrecking ball to our democratic institutions and the rule of law, I think it's really important that we first work to reinvigorate those institutions, but also strengthen our elections. So, for instance, I'm a big fan of voting by mail. Certainly it's worked well in this primary during this pandemic, but I think that we need to make sure that we're strengthening that and allowing those opportunities going forward.
What separates you from the other candidates in this race? And mind you, there are like 14 different candidates.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are some good candidates. I think there's a few things, Mike, that set me apart. The first is that I'm really proud that in my professional life, I have shown a commitment to fighting for everybody in my community. So as a lawyer, after I graduated from Georgetown Law School and was a federal law clerk in Indianapolis, I chose to move to New Orleans for 5 years and became a public defender down there in one of the most underserved, understaffed public defender's offices in the country. I also helped to co-found a national nonprofit law firm that represents disabled veterans. I still work on the board of that law firm. I'm really proud that as a lawyer, I've shown that commitment to fighting for everybody. I think it's critical that we have a representative in Congress who's going to fight for every community, every person in Northwest Indiana, kind of no matter what their background is. And I've shown that commitment in my professional life, and I'd like to take those values to Congress. The other thing is, you know, is that we've been very fortunate, certainly, to have, you know, Pete Biskroski for so long. But I think that as we're choosing a new representative, that it would be a good thing for us to have somebody who can bring a fresh perspective and who isn't part of kind of the old politics or the old political establishment in Northwest Indiana. And I'm proud that I'd be able to provide that fresh, different voice.
You know, there's been a lot of back and forth from President Trump's office to his administration on whether the country is moving too slow or too fast in reopening. What is your position on that?
You know, I certainly want to get the country, you know, open as soon as possible, but we have to listen to the experts. And what the experts have told us is that there are a set of guidelines, including, you know, 2 weeks of decreasing number of new cases. And the fact is that the president has just set aside those guidelines, and he's playing politics with this process like he plays politics with far too many other things that are going on in this country. So while I want to get open, I'm just very concerned that the way that we've done it now in parts of the country, including in Indiana, isn't listening to what the experts have to say, and that we're really setting ourselves up for a second wave, either in the summer or in the fall. I hope that's not the case, but I'm really worried, certainly at Trump's rhetoric, but also what we've seen out of many states, including Indiana.
How has this pandemic impacted your ability to get your message out to the voters?
Well, certainly this is a unique campaign environment, you know, Michael. And for us, we've kind of had a few guideposts during this crisis. The first is that as a campaign, especially when people were very much locked down, we obviously had some free time and our staff had free time. And so we've tried to help out where we can. We've been volunteering in a socially distanced way in opportunities in all three counties in the first congressional district. Certainly that was an opportunity to help out a little bit, but also an opportunity to see and to learn about the good things that are going on in our communities. The other thing that we've done is we've obviously are not knocking on doors or going to events, but we have been very, we've really ramped up our phone calls, our phone banking. And that has allowed us to do a couple of things. First and foremost, check in on people, see how they're doing, but also we've had some really good conversations about issues, including about healthcare, about the lack of leadership we're seeing out of the Trump administration right now. So it's been a challenge politically, but you know, I think that we've adapted well to both be able to help out a little bit, but also to get our message out in a more innovative way.
Early voting has already started in Northwest Indiana, and there's only a few days before the actual primary day of June 2nd on Tuesday. What are you doing between now and then to get your message out there to the voters?
You know, in addition to some of the advertising we're doing, you know, on TV and on the internet, you know, we are placing thousands of phone calls a day to residents across Northwest Indiana. I'm on the phones myself talking with people about the need for bold progressive action in Washington, D.C. on issues like healthcare, on issues like climate change, on issues like restoring our democracy. And so we're doing that and trying to make sure that we can get our message across to every last voter in Northwest Indiana while doing it in a socially distanced, responsible way.
All right. Jim Harper is running in the Democratic primary for the first congressional district race here in Northwest Indiana on June 2nd. Jim, thank you so much for joining us here on Off Mic.
Thanks, Mike.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're speaking to five of the candidates running in the first congressional Democratic primary, and our next candidate is Sabrina Hake, an attorney from Gary. You know, there's only just a few days left before the June 2nd primary, and we're already into early voting. Sabrina Hake, What are you doing between now and then to get your message out?
Well, we have been out at the polling sites. Yesterday, I was at Gary for the first half of the day and at the Genesis Center, and we had a camp. A lot of the campaigns did. We had our van and, you know, everything. And then I was in Portage, and then today I've been in Valparaiso. So we're out meeting candidates in person in a way that we have not been able to because of COVID. And then we still have an online media presence and, you know, advertising, digital advertising. We've got commercials on CNN, MSNBC, BET, HGTV. We've had 3 commercials released so far, and our newest one just came out today, actually. So we've got a pretty strong media presence on cable, Northwest Indiana Cable.
You know, how has the COVID-19 pandemic impacted your ability to communicate with voters?
Well, obviously, you can't go out and meet people, so you're reduced to doing digital outreach and media outreach. There isn't any other substitution than that. And, you know, it's unfortunate in this race in particular because I'm polling third. It's a strong third. We've released our data. It was district-wide, and we gained the highest percentage of the undecided voters between March and May. So I've got a trajectory that's going upward. Now, the 2 leading candidates who are in front of me have been in office in Northwest Indiana for over 15 years. So they're running on name recognition.
And let me ask you this. What are your top 3 issues that you're running on for Congress?
Well, I've learned since I've come into this race that if we don't get money out of politics, we're not going to fix anything. So a big issue for me is campaign finance reform. We've got candidates who are funded by big corporations and PAC money, and we're not going to be able to fix any of the problems if they're being funded by corporations that are invested in the status quo of those problems. One of my big issues, a substantive issue for me, is climate change. And climate change to me is an emergency, and it's pandemics are only going to increase because as the temperature changes, microbial life changes. The scientists have been warning us for about 6 years that a pandemic was coming, and they're saying now that they will continue and they'll increase until we address climate change, and they'll get worse. So climate change for me is an existential issue that I'm extremely interested in addressing. But again, we've got candidates in this race who are funded by fossil fuel, and I'm very concerned if those candidates get in, they won't be able to address this issue sufficiently or quickly enough. So climate change is a second issue. The overriding issue is campaign finance and getting money out of politics. I'm telling you, Michael, we are not going to fix any of our problems. Education, climate, healthcare, guns, what have you that you're interested in. As long as there's a big corporation profiting from the status quo, we're not going to be able to change it because they are funding the candidates. And it's just human nature. It's not a criticism of those individuals. It's human nature. If a corporation puts you in office, you're not going to turn around and bite the hand that feeds you. The third issue is health care. Medicare for All, to me, is the most elegant response to our very broken health care system. And I am a fiscal conservative, Michael. I started out as a Republican. It just so happens that all of the progressive ideas that I support, to me, are the most fiscally conservative way to solve those problems. An example is health care. People think that Medicare for All is so liberal and progressive. It's actually more conservative of an approach because the idea is to cut out the profiteering and the middleman. It doesn't change the health care providers, pediatricians, doctors, et cetera, won't change. But we've got a double payment system going on in the United States compared to the other industrialized countries in the world. We're paying about double what all of the other, like Austria and Japan and Canada, these aren't undeveloped countries, these are developed countries, and we're paying double. And that's because we have profits in our system, and they do not. But again, there's a candidate running who is funded by Big Pharma, and he's not going to be able to sufficiently redress some of the pharmaceutical issues that we have, the runaway prescription costs, because he's backed by Big Pharma. So these are the kinds of things that bring me back to the original point, which is that if we don't get money out of politics, we're not going to solve our biggest problem. It's just common sense.
What separates you from the other candidates running in this Democratic primary?
Well, I can't articulate a difference between me and 15 candidates. I'll narrow it to the top 3. According to our polls, the top 3 are me, McDermott, and Mervan. And we've released that data. The biggest difference between me and the two of them is that I am not a career politician. I've never run for office before. I have a background in law and manufacturing, and I've been a lawyer for 26 years, and I've been a corporate a general counsel for many years in manufacturing. So I have a strong private industry background that informs my economic development policies. I've also never run for office before, and those two gentlemen have been in office in Northwest Indiana for 15 years. And I like them both personally, but I am a little queasy about career politicians in general. We were not supposed to be set up with people go in and stay in public office for 20 and 30 years. You lose your edge, you lose perspective, and you don't have to go back to answer to the people you govern over if you're going to be in office for a few years. So the whole idea of the one man, one vote thing was to have people that went into office for a short time, and then they had to go back and answer to the people that put them there. You know, if you go back and read the Jeffersonian papers, he railed on career politicians. So I think 10 years in office is about right. I'm very much opposed to campaign finance that is funded by big corporations. The Fox News money that's funding someone else in this race is very alarming and concerning to me. And I'm not funded by corporations. I'm not a career politician. And I have a very strong economic development plan for Northwest Indiana that I think has been overlooked. We are sitting on a gold mine in Northwest Indiana. We, unlike any other place in the world, we've got steel, we've got a port, we've got rail, we've got air, and we're right next to a huge consumer base, and we've got fresh water. Fresh water is a big deal when it comes to steel. We should be in the wind turbine industry, provided that they're recyclable. We are capable of putting in an all solar powered steel assembly line, an integrated assembly line, if we want to go into the wind and solar components. And that market is the fastest growing industry in the world. The turbine industry, the wind turbine industry, is set to exceed $1 trillion in 2040. I want a piece of that. We should be in that. We should be dominating that industry, and I want to do it in a way that doesn't hurt our environment. And we have the ability to do that because we've got all this acreage right off of Lake Michigan. I mean, it's unfathomable that we're not the economic powerhouse of the country. And it's because, I believe, people have not come in here with the vision, because they get in office and they can't – you get mired down in machine politics and you're unable to see a vision forward. I have a really strong vision for what Northwest Indiana should be, and my economic development plan, I think, is the strongest one of anyone. And it's not just for steel. I have a steel import ban that I've already run through Congressman Visklovsky, who liked it so much he took it back to Congress already, where if you can compare the carbon output, the carbon footprint of a similar manufactured product, my position is that we should have a temporary import ban to give our heavy industry a 10-year period to start the transition to renewable energy. If we don't do that, in 10 years, the European firms that we're competing with are going to be able to outprice us because it's so much cheaper. Renewable energy is so much cheaper. So it's the initial outlay. If you're going to convert to hydrogen or renewable energy, the initial outlay is big. But after 10 years, after that has worn off, we're not going to be able to compete if we don't start to transfer now. And it's going to take about 10 years to complete the process. I also have a tiny home community development in mind, a solar highway from Chicago to Michigan City, like the one they have in Denmark and South Korea. I want to have hydroponic farms and use abandoned warehouses to have lucrative hydroponic farms. And marijuana should be a big cash crop in Indiana.
Sabrina Haake is running in the Democratic primary for Congress in the June 2nd primary. Sabrina, thank you so much for joining us here on Off Mic.
Thank you, Michael. Everyone, please get out and vote. Go Sabrina.com. Thanks for the opportunity, Michael.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
We have Brendan and Carrie here from Clancy's Public House out of Portage.
We got Chris here joining us from Gady's Chocolates and Ice Cream out of Lansing.
So we're going to have Nick from Albano's on from Valparaiso. And they just opened up a place maybe 6 months ago in the mall called the Pita Stop. It's very unique. We got the 18th Street Brewery in.
Let's eat with Chef Nick every Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lake Shore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're speaking to five of the candidates running in the first congressional Democratic primary. Our next candidate is North Township Trustee Frank Marvan Jr. Frank, thank you for joining us here on Off Mic.
Thank you for the opportunity, Michael. This is a great chance to be able to talk about who I am and my vision for Northwest Indiana and be able to talk about critical issues that are faced, that we're all faced with currently.
Well, let me ask you this. You started off your campaign similar to Mayor McDermott late last fall, and then the pandemic hit. How has that affected your ability to get your message out?
Well, the first and foremost, you know, as a North Township trustee, the number one focus I have is being able to help crisis and being able to help the 180,000 people that I represent. And so I represent Hammond, Whiting, East Chicago, Highland, and Munster. And what I consistently do every day is help stabilize people's homes who face financial crises. And when this pandemic hit, the first thing we needed to do is make sure people had access to health care and that we were protecting our most vulnerable population. And so politicking went to the wayside because my number one mission is to make sure that I am central and located and that my office has the mission to make sure that we take care of people. We were able to work with the American Red Cross, be able to have blood drives. We worked with Catholic Charities and the Northwest Indiana Federation. The Northwest Food Bank. We were able to get over 1,000 senior citizens and disabled people food. And ultimately, we were taking people who were who were clogged up in the unemployment system and had no aid in the service industry and employees who lost their jobs. The North Township Trustee's Office were able to stabilize with making sure that they had the resources to make sure they had rent and food and utilities paid for. So since the pandemic started about mid-March, we've been in full action making sure that we're doing our due diligence to protect and stabilize homes in Hammond, Whiting, East Chicago, Highland, and Munster because it was impacted by everyone.
Well, let me ask you this. As a township trustee for a large township, North Township, you've had to turn your attention away from your campaign to deal with the pandemic. Has that been a positive for you or a negative?
It's been a positive. It's been a positive because my service first is to make sure that you take care of people. Something that we were able to accomplish that we started 5 years ago was in the city of Gary. We had an organization that was five county wide. It was called the NISA organization, the Northwest Indiana Security and Sharing Alliance. And that started with the disaster in 2008 when the U.S. District Attorney's Office, David Kapp, brought U.S. Steel, BP Amoco together and all the emergency management agencies. And what we did is we formed a coalition of public and private partnerships to make sure that we were prepared for a disaster. And so for 5 years, we had drills, tabletop drills. We worked together. We tore down silos. And we made sure that we were prepared. And we were able to put the District 1 hospital district that is from five counties, 17 districts, at the Gary Airport to be able to distribute and raise PPE, protective equipment, and ventilators and goods for our healthcare professionals. And so what this did is it was able to allow us to help the most amount of people and to be able to highlight the fact that we will have an incident command center at the Gary Airport that we helped put together. That's a $10 million investment. But ultimately, you know, my job comes first. And the ability to serve individuals and to make sure that they have access to food, to make sure that we are creating coalitions and collaborations that we're getting. There were 34 ventilators that were brought into the NISA headquarters that we were able to distribute to the 17 hospitals, which were able to give to a relief for those hospitals to make sure that they had the ventilators for the patients who needed them. And so, you know, we talked to infectious disease doctors and we got the message out on how you can best avoid the issue, and we've updated the public. So ultimately, there is a separation between running for Congress and doing my duty as a North Township trustee. And I believe during this time, my number one focus, as I consistently have said, was to make sure that the 180,000 people that I represent within North Township, we did that to the utmost of our ability.
Township Trustee Marvan, what are your top three campaign issues you're running on for Congress?
Well, we obviously have to be prepared for the pandemic, and we obviously have to be able to put a commission together that is making sure that we are prepared going forward. And what that looks like on the health side and with the CDC, we have to be able to end arguments among us about science. And I'm a firm believer that the CDC and our ability to make sure that we overcome this and any future reemergence of the virus, that we're able to be prepared. So that goes directly into healthcare, making sure that what we do is we realize that the inadequacies within our healthcare system played a role in the number of people who were infected because, simply, those with certain medical conditions, diabetes, COPD, any compromised medical conditions you were at a higher risk. So what that means to me is we need to focus on healthcare. We need to make sure that as a country and as Northwest Indiana, we have our most vulnerable, that they have access to healthcare. Short term, I have consistently said and have always said we need to have a public option that you can buy into. And if you are a union member, if you're a teacher, a steel worker, a teamster, and you've given up pay increases for the healthcare that you have, we want you to keep that. What we need to do as a nation, as a congressman, what I will do is make sure that we uplift access to healthcare and the federal Medicare policies are equivalent to the private policies. And when we do that, then we'll have equity within our healthcare system. And, you know, not to go too far off the woods, but it is going to prove that people in minority communities were at risk. And studies have shown and outcomes have shown that there's less access to healthcare in those communities. And people who are living in poverty do not have access to healthcare. We've got to change that because it's now a health risk to our entire nation, and we must make sure that our nation and Northwest Indiana has access to health care. Secondly, mm-hmm. Secondly, what is extremely important is making sure we get our manufacturing base up and running. So a lot of the equipment that we needed, we had to be able to get overseas from China, from other countries, that was masked down. What that has educated me in the economics is we've got to be able to manufacture those products in-house, so we're not reliant on a separate country to bring in those goods and services. We must be able to increase our manufacturing base here in Northwest Indiana and be able to provide them an economy and a market for those goods. And then the other thing that is vital, I have been endorsed by Congressman Vislowski, the outgoing retiring congressman, and the United Steelworkers. And I bring that up because we must be able to invest in an infrastructure bill that gets our economy up and going. And when we replace roads and bridges, and, you know, it's very topical in Michigan right now, in dams, making sure that we have the Buy American provision in place that utilizes our steel industry to make sure that when we are investing in our roads and bridges and infrastructure, that we're using the American steel with public tax dollars to invest in ourselves, to invest in America, to be able to make those changes. And then third, I want to make sure, you know, when we take care of the economy, when we take care of the health crisis, that we are focused on education and that we are making sure that public dollars are going towards public education. We do what we can as a federal government to make sure our teachers are appreciated and they receive the salaries that they deserve. I've been endorsed by the American Federation of Teachers, which is the teachers union, and the educators of Hammond and East Chicago and Gary, and also other schools, 10 different school districts within Northwest Indiana. And I earned that endorsement by working first hand-in-hand with the educators to make sure we're removing obstacles. And I want to make sure that for-profit charter schools, we put an end to that so that we're not consistently having referendums because we're chasing dollars that are going to private for-profit schools. That must end.
Trustee Mervan, there's been a lot of back and forth with President Donald Trump over whether states are taking too long to reopen from the coronavirus. Where do you stand on that issue?
I stand with safety first. I believe that Governor Holcomb has a practical, common sense approach to what needs to be done. We cannot risk the health of ourselves and our families and the evolution of what this virus can do. 90,000 people have perished because of it. I want to make sure that my family is safe. I want to make sure that the second wave of the Kawasaki disease that's being discovered in children where it attacks their organs, that we're protecting our kids. And on the same note, as again, as the North Township trustee, I understand that phases 2 and 3 and 4 are necessary, and we have to get our economy back on track because we have to be able to work. We have to be able to make sure that people can pay for their rent, pay for their mortgages.
You do talk about safety and reopening the state, but there was some pushback you received when you reopened the golf course that the township runs during the pandemic. Any thoughts on why did you reopen that golf course so early?
Sure. First of all, that was political, and it was a political stunt by a candidate who has found out that he has maximized where he's at, and he has a high ability of people who dislike him in the county and the way that he approaches things. So first and foremost, it was political. Secondly, the golf courses were always open. The governor of Indiana allowed them to be open. They never closed. But you have to be responsible, and I have consistently been someone who has ran Wicker Park, which is a destination, and we had the walking trail open, and we did it right. We separated golfers. We made sure that we tried it for 12 hours, and ultimately I decided after that that it was the best thing to do to make sure we closed it.
Well, Frank Marvin is trustee for North Township. He's a candidate in the Democratic primary for the 1st Congressional District race. Trustee Marvin, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Michael, I thank you for the opportunity. All the voters, be safe. And to our veterans for this Memorial Day weekend, I did not serve, but I've served you for 15 years. I thank you for what your service has been for our country. God bless you, and God bless America, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, and we'll be back with more Off Mic.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We're speaking to five of the candidates running in the 1st Congressional Democratic primary. And our final candidate we're going to speak to today is Indiana State Representative Mata Candelaria Reardon. Welcome to Off Mic, Representative Reardon.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me ask you this. You started off your campaign near the late fall. Then the pandemic hit. How has that affected your ability to get your message out?
Well, you know, Michael, thankfully we have, we are living in times of strong technology, and we've been able to do it through the support of technology. We've been reaching out to our voters on our digital platforms, on through their mailboxes, the good old fashioned way, and certainly through, person to person phone contact. Those are the ways that we've been able to communicate with our voters.
You know, and as a state representative, you've had to turn your attention away from your campaign to deal with the pandemic on a state level. Has that been a positive for you or negative?
Well, I mean, every time that I get to serve, I feel like it's a positive. When I get to actually help people and do the things that that inspired me to run, I think that's a positive. It is my job as a representative to do those things, and I embrace it, which is one of the reasons that I got into public service, was to be able to help people. So, you know, I think it's just a challenging time for everybody, and I'm happy to be of use.
If you're elected to Congress, what are your three top campaign issues?
Well, I think you know, one of the things that we often talk about in the region, and certainly, you know, my vision for this is a region that feels connected to their state representative, somebody that they feel connected with, so that together we can address the urgent needs of our region and make sure that, you know, when we're looking at capital improvement plans for local governments, that they align with federal requests. I think making sure this pandemic has certainly shown us a glaring hole in our healthcare system, and you know, we really need to ensure that all people have access to healthcare. It's something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I've worked on as a state legislator, voting on the increases for access to people through the Healthy Indiana Plan that now provides healthcare to over 400,000 Hoosiers. So those are, you know, some of the things that I think we also have to address our transportation needs and create an interconnected system and finish the things that we've started with regard to the South Shore expansion and the double tracking and efforts at the Gary Airport. Those are all things that are certainly on my list of things that I'd like to do as I move from my role as a state legislator to a federal legislative role.
You know, there's been a lot of back and forth with President Donald Trump over whether states are taking too long to reopen. Where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I think that, you know, we have tried in Indiana, tried to be thoughtful and phase in some of these things over time. And I think that, you know, certainly it would have been my preference to have a little bit more clear leadership. I think that a phase-in plan needs to be publicized more. I think that people are unsure, are we open, are we not open? And so I think it should have been delineated and disseminated a little bit more clearly to the people, but here we are.
Representative Reardon, what separates you from the other candidates in this congressional race?
Well, I think the number one thing is that I'm the only candidate in this field with any legislative experience. And in these troubled times, I believe that more than ever, it's important who we elect to the United States Congress. And by experience, I mean I'm the only one in this race that has drafted, authored, and voted on legislation. And I voted on lowering prescription drug prices and testing of the water in our schools for lead. I voted on criminal justice reform and workforce development. So you don't really have to take my word for the kind of legislator that I would be as your congresswoman. You can look at my strong legislative record of fighting for families, unions, and public education.
Let me ask you this. Now, endorsements are very important to any candidate running for office, and you've had a few that have backed your candidacy. Could you just name a few of them who are backing you, who have endorsed you, and what do those endorsements mean to you?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things, or one of the ones that I'm most proud of is the Bold PAC endorsement. I think the Bold PAC is an organization made up of Latino legislators in leadership Latino congressmen and women in the United States Congress. So there's 38 people that want me on their team that believe that I bring value to their team and to the United States Congress. We've gotten endorsements from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, so the union that has, workers on the front line today. These are frontline workers that support me. We've been endorsed by, the Poder PAC. We've been endorsed by AFSCME, Indiana-Kentucky AFSCME, the Smart Transportation Division, which is the Locomotive Engineers. And so we have really, got a good, the Voter Protection Project, whose mission is to support open and fair and honest elections, has chosen my candidacy for that.
Representative Reardon, as a state representative, you've been in the State House now for a number of years. What would you say are some of your one or two top accomplishments that you'd like to speak of?
Well, I think the number one, I would say, is certainly, that expansion of health care to 400,000 Hoosiers through the Healthy Indiana Plan. The other thing is building healthier communities through co-authoring the statewide smoking ban that provides smoke-free restaurants for our communities. I think the other would be the $14 million budget inclusion for the Little Calumet River Flood Control Project and the long-term funding maintenance of that project, a federal project that languished for over 30 years and finally was completed.
Representative Reardon, I do have to ask you this one. You've been involved in a very public issue with Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill. The Indiana Supreme Court suspended Hill's law license for 30 days based on testimony from you and three other women who accused him of groping you at an Indianapolis bar 2 years ago. Has this issue been a distraction for your campaign?
I would just say, Michael, that it's been a distraction for my life, not just for my campaign. When something traumatic happens to you, it certainly becomes a distraction.
You know, there's only just a few days left before the June 2nd primary, and we're already into early voting. What are you doing between now and then to get your message out?
Well, we are running television ads. We're up on digital platforms. We are doing direct mail. We are making phone calls. And those are the things that we can do right now. I don't think it's appropriate to go door to door and knock on people's doors during a global pandemic, no matter what phase we're in here of opening. I think it's prudent to continue to keep our distance from each other. And I don't want to put anybody's health at risk for a political campaign, but we are trying to get our message out and ensure that voters know that experience matters. It matters who we send to the United States Congress. You know, one of the things that really pointed that out for me today was this discussion of impeachment. And, the mayor was on his radio show today talking about how he still does not believe that impeachment was the right process. And it really showed to me a glaring difference in the role of an executive and the role of somebody in the legislature. We, as you know, in Indiana have a super minority, which means that they do not even need us to have a quorum. And so for me, I really, when the mayor said that this morning, I thought he doesn't understand the legislative process, because it is our responsibility and our job as legislators to show up, to question the majority. In whether the Senate voted on impeachment or not, the House had a responsibility to vote on impeachment and put that vote on the board and see who these elected officials represent truly. Do they represent the people, or do they represent their own interests in their party? That is our responsibility, to question and push forward issues, whether we know the outcome of the vote or not. That is our responsibility as legislators. It's our responsibility to put those questions forward and put them on the board for a vote. Where do you stand on this issue? That vote matters, whether you win it or not.
Well, State Representative Mara Candelaria Reardon is a Democrat running in the 1st Congressional House District race in the primary on June 2nd. Representative Reardon, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And that's going to wrap up our show today. I'd like to thank all our guests today. You can hear this program again as a podcast by visiting lakeshorepublicradio.org's website. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend.